Up next, for the next couple hours, we're going to tap into one of our favorite guests, John Hogue, as we talk about issues that are facing all of us through his eyes. Get ready for that. And yes, we'll talk about some of the candidates. I believe, as I mentioned, John has picked the last 11 presidential elections by popular vote. He picked Al Gore over George Bush. Of course, George Bush won the presidency, but Al Gore won with the most popular vote. So technically, John Hogue is 11 for 11. And we'll be back with him in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Two full hours now, John Hogue with us. John writes on the subjects of the occult, the parapsychology, mysticism, and prophecy. He's considered a world authority on Nostradamus. He is a best-selling author. His work has brought him international acclaim. He's been published in all kinds of languages. And here he is back on Coast to Coast with the final warning prophecies of Hopi Indians and biblical prophecies about the four blood moons. John, welcome back, my friend.
Thanks for having me back on, George.
Gosh, always things going on, huh? It just doesn't stop.
Well, it's just going to get wilder because we are entering next year, the year of the flaming fire monkey of Chinese astrology.
Uh-oh. What does that mean?
Monkey business.
All over the place.
Going ape, as it were. That's one thing. That's certainly a... There has been a force that I've been, you know, in doing these presidential predictions. I'm actually 12-0 on the presidential predictions since 1968. But when I look at what's going on in this coming period, it is... We have two forces of destiny that are colliding in what will be a kind of mutable mix-up that in astrological terms is what we're going to see next year, you know, with how people play their Jupiter influences in this campaign. Now, in layman's terms, that means do they use Jupiter energy to expand, to innovate, to look at new ways and new ideas, which is really what the year of the fire monkey is about, or do they use the darker sides of Jupiter, which is a self-centered, religiously extreme, dogmatic, and so that's kind of a broad brush definition of what's going on next year. And also what's going on, you know, it's one thing to do the trends, certainly for individuals in a prophecy sense. And certainly I've been listening off and on for the last several hours to all the great guests you've been having concerning their expertise. It is, in the way I look at it and view at it, you also have to look at those unexpected influences of things outside of one's destiny number, outside of one's time frame or time link from the earlier guests. One has to look at things like the fact that there are stars showing that we are definitely entering into just what happened 8 years ago, some kind of economic crisis in 2016. That will, of course, change the gestalt, defined. You know, people wake up with different issues in their minds than they will have when they went to sleep the night before. And that, of course, will alter the situation with which candidate can then rise up to the opportunity. They've often said that Rahm Emanuel, the mayor of Chicago, famously or notoriously once said, never let a disaster, a catastrophe be... Don't miss what you
an opportunity.
An opportunity, yeah. That's there. And I think taken out of context, it sounds very cynical, but it actually means that, for instance, give you an opportunity. If you do not want to, there was an opportunity in the last 2008 Great Recession, which frankly is a depression. You know, the 1930s, they called that a Great Recession until it was over. So we're doing it again. this depression that started was an opportunity that FDR, Roosevelt, used to reform the banks. Obama had the same opportunity, and he didn't really reform the banks. So one can exploit the opportunity of a disaster for something good or miss the opportunity. And so we have this coming. We're going to see a bit of a nasty tickle of it next month when the defibrillator called quantitative easing mm-hmm. is going to be lifted off the chest of this economy, which has been keeping it beating with an artificial pumping of electricity, so to speak, to use the metaphor. When Yellen's and the Fed lift the defibrillator of funny money, fiat money made out of air, thrown into the financial district, inflating the stock market, the beating of the economy is going to flutter, and it's going to be a bit of a scare. And that also will change the focus of the candidates and what they're talking about. And what's intriguing about all this is how, to me, is how, I've just released a new book called Predictions for the Last Blood Moon. Perfect. And the last blood moon is coming on the 28th of September. This has been a concept that back in 2013 was kind of brought into public minds as a possible biblical prophetic portent that was triggered by the prophecies of Joel, carried on by the prophecies of Jesus in his Mount of Olives prophecy, and also embellished by St. John of the Book of Revelation. And it so happens that this coming September, which may see the first flutter of the economic crisis, happens when the last blood moon glowers over the skies of Israel and the Arab world. And that, some people like Reverend John Hagee of Cornerstone Church in San Antonio, Texas, who is the author of the best-selling Before Blood Moon, Something's Going to Change, mm-hmm. He thinks that this is the beginning of the tribulation and rapture and the end of days. Now, I look at this subject in a unique way to most of the books. It's like what I did with the 2012 situation.
Right. Calming effect too, John. You bring that with you, and that's so important.
Well, you know, is in this field, there's a lot of people setting their hair on fire, basically. And one of the reasons why I have a very long ponytail is that I don't set my hair on
fire. That's right.
You know, I get into some very strange, weird stuff related to the prophetic traditions of the world. But I've learned over 30 years of doing this and actually being empathetic to different views of the prophetic world is that many different angles are there from many different traditions and seers. And the danger, the myopia of a lot of traditions is that they only, because of the religious charge that's laced in the work, the kind of expectation that their prophecies because their religion is the only one God loves, is opposed to all the other religions who also feel the same way about their religion. Everybody thinks that their narrative is the way it's going to be. I see that happening in my travels all over the world with different evangelical Hindus, evangelical Muslims, evangelical Christians, evangelical atheists, all forms of a religion, religious fervor. That gets in the way of all of this. So in this little book that I produce, it's available on Amazon as an ebook, quick comprehensive read into the blood moons. I look at the blood moons. I look at what Hagee has contended, and Blitz, Reverend Blitz, who's actually the originator of the idea that Hagee has picked up on. And I apply mundane political astrology as one tradition. I look at how a lot of the claims of Hagee don't really match. For instance, he says that the blood moons is this rare lunar tetrad, which happens, is supposed to be very rare that you have blood moons, that it's four blood moons in a row in 2-year period time without any other kind of partial eclipse. And so he claims that in 500 years there have been three major blood moon appearances during important periods of Jewish history. The truth is there have been five, but he doesn't really give a lot of energy to the two that didn't seem to match any significant event. I mean, he looks at the Spanish Inquisition as one of them, and he looks at the birth of Israel as the other, and the third being the Six-Day War period, that two blood moons of the four of that period kind of punctuated within a few weeks in and out the Six-Day War, which was an important, it basically won back an important step towards the end times. But it's not exact. It's not as he claims that, you know, God makes all the stars and the planets move perfectly, and it's all perfect messages. Well, it's almost funny what happens to some of these things. I mean, he said the Inquisition ended in 1492. Actually, the Inquisition didn't end until the 1830s. And it only got worse, actually, after 1492, but the moon that was warning that came in 1493, a year late. Israel was born in 1948. The moon that was supposed to be God's message hailing that it was coming came in the following year. Almost all these moons don't show up over the Middle East. In fact, our current tetrad, which started with 15 April 2014 on Passover, then 8th October 2014 on the Feast of the Tabernacles, Sukkot, or the 4th of April was what happened this year, and of course the 28th, and that was Passover and Sukkot again. These usually happen on Jewish holy holidays, but it's made to look unusual and rare, but since it's a lunar calendar, the Hebrew calendar is lunar, how else can it fall but on Jewish holidays? So the problem is that what I found around the initial moon was in 15 April 2014 is that came 5 days before what we in astrology were anticipating was a far more rare event. And that is what Grand Cross of cardinal planets, all in cardinal, that is leadership position.
Remember that one?
Very rare. We talked about it. In fact, it was that around that time, before that time, that I did something very rare. I'd already done a 3-hour show, and I asked to do another one, just maybe 20 or so days later, because of the warning alarms that started ringing for me over Ukraine. That the Ukrainian civil war that was brewing could actually be the first really significant time that we have a real countdown to Nostradamus' two timelines for a short Cold War, a new Cold War that was short. And the first timeline leads to 3 years and 7 months that Russia and America would go to war, or 13 years. And looking at how the signs were fitting with the prophecy that you had false narratives, especially from the West, projecting a lot of stuff on Russia that really is not true, that I was seeing happening. And this is the kind of war that the World War prophets that we talked about on that show, in my book, A New Cold War, the prophecies of Nostradamus, Stormberger, and Edgar Cayce, they basically were saying, with open eyes, people, the world would step into this catastrophe. That World War III, unlike the other two, people would never see it coming. That it would suddenly be upon them, and it could kill 2/3 of the human race. And so this is a very, this moon came in within the orb, that is a degree of influence, of this even far more rare Grand Cross. So even though it seems significant in biblical portents, it's even more significant in the astrological traditions that something significant would happen. Well, right around that Grand Cross is when a peace attempt between the European Union, the Russians, the Ukrainians, and and all combatants involved failed. Within 2 days later, that was the beginning of the real shooting in the Ukrainian Civil War, and that started
this
Cold War going.
They tried, and it fell apart. And it's amazing that these signs pinpoint some of these events.
It does, and of course, the significance of October 8th is how it focuses around doings with attempts to negotiate a peace settlement with Iran. And I go into detail in the book about that. And the question then is this a good thing or a bad thing? I have a book that I've been updating since 2007 that is called Nostradamus, The War with Iran, Islamic Prophecies of the Apocalypse. That book we've talked about, ironically, I published it around the same time that John Hagee published his Blood Moons book, I found out later, in early October 2013. So there's a synchronicity there. There was a really big window of astrological window that Nostradamus put out that looked like war between the West planning a great war against Iran, which he names outright in its arcane names. He even names the coast of Karmania, which in 16th century was the Iranian side of the Strait of Hormuz, as a naval engagement. And a lot of other things were very much in the clear, which shows that Iran has a very important role to play, and how we handle it either causes the greatest war in the Middle East yet to come, which could have happened in 2006, 7, and 8. But in that early edition, I predicted that the more dangerous window would begin in September of 2015 through to September of 2016. Because
interesting too, John, because Jonathan Cahn, who was just on talking about the Shemitah, the Jewish Shemitah, seems to echo exactly what you're saying too.
Yeah, there are some people that get a bit anal about how it's got to be right on the right date, like some people kibitz about how, you know, the blood moon didn't exactly hit the Jewish day of Passover. But those people are missing the point. The point is that you in Native in Indian Native American understandings and others, it's not so Western centric in the idea of exactitude. It's more like a season change. So it doesn't have to exactly be on the day that it's supposed to happen. There can be some looseness. Just like you don't exactly start fall on a certain day. I mean, the weather doesn't just push a button and it switches into fall from summer. It takes a little gradual time. History and time is a little like nature. It has gradual changes with sudden explosive changes mixed in. And so a lot of these traditions are pointing in the general direction in the timeline to something significant happening. And, of course, the third blood moon that happened on 4th April 2015 happened the day or two after the Iranian peace agreement was agreed upon. These are the terms that we will write into as an agreement. And I've been saying for a couple of years now that there would be a chance, an 11th hour chance for peace. And I said that despite how I have been well known as a great critic of Barack Obama, I have also seen that he had a destiny, another opportunity to change things by being the great peacemaker in the Middle East.
John, stay with us. We're going to come back, talk more about prophecy. We'll get into the Hopis next. Well, we'll take your calls next hour with John Hogue, of course. And his book is Predictions for the Last Blood Moon. It is an ebook. We'll tell you again how you can get it. By the way, if you want to watch something, watch John's interview with me on Beyond Belief, our television program. You can find it in the archives there by going to this website, beyondbelief.com. It is an unbelievable program, 99 cents for the entire month as a preview. So take advantage of it. Look for the John Hogue interview on beyondbelief.com. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. And John Hogue is with us. Those of you emailing me about whether we're going to get into the Donald Trump situation, Jeb Bush, of course. We've got John here for another hour and a half, so we've got some time. Wait. John, the Hopis, of course. Tell me about the origins of their prophecies and where that all came about.
The Hopi Native Americans of southwestern America are a Pueblo Indian society that has had domiciles continuously inhabited since 1100 AD. And they also seem to be, their lands are in the four corners of the United States, the states that meet together, Nevada, Utah, Arizona, and New Mexico. And they see the world in their prophecies, which are oral, passed down through generations, and kept secret until certain signs would reveal that the Great Spirit wanted them to tell the races of the world about the coming of what is called the Great Purification. The Hopi believe that the world has been destroyed and reborn four times. And like so many other antediluvian and ancient civilizations, they believe the last world, the third world, was destroyed by flood, just like what we see in Noah's
That's
Ark.
Right. It echoes biblical prophecy pretty closely, doesn't it?
Yeah. They believe the next world, this current world, the fourth world, would reach a point where the human race had reached a point of misuse and abuse of the earth and going astray from the balance of balancing life with technology, with nature, that basically the Great Purification is one of fire. Now, again, as I try to kind of be measured in looking at this kind of wild world of prophecy, it is not stated clearly what that fire is, and could even well be a choice between the fire of awakening consciousness towards what we need to do to purify our consciousness, or it could be the fires of a runaway global warming, which trigger because of the climatic disaster that we're creating, which is the other thing other than this new Cold War that's emerged in our lives since 2014, since the first blood moon. This is the other great alarm bell in prophecy that I see, that the human race is still not taking seriously the fact that we are altering the planetary climate. Hopi prophecy, like many of the 500 nations of North America, which the Hopi called Turtle Island, it's intriguing that they call it that, because if you look from space, North America, the tail of the turtle is Mexico. One of the legs is Baja California. Mm-hmm. Another leg is Alaska. Another leg, the head is Quebec Peninsula. And then the Baffin Island area and then Florida are the other legs. And it looks, in an abstract way, just like a turtle. And these are the people who also believed in one of the destructions of the world, that two great God spirits held the poles of the earth together. They saw the world way back in ancient times, they saw the world as round and having poles that could tilt, and that caused one of the destructions of the previous worlds. These people are very tuned into the earth and ecology, and their main thrust of their prophecy is that at a certain time when the creation of this current fourth world took place, in their mythology, they talk about how there were two brothers that were created by the Great Spirit. The younger brother was the red brother, and he would stay on Turtle Island. His older brother, the white brother called Pahana, would go out into the world and explore things. And the red brother was the more yin, earth, harmonic-oriented, intuitive brother. The white brother was yang, scientific, the explorer, the investigator, the penetrator. Mm-hmm. And so he went off and created tribes of the white people. The Hopi always believed that they would come back, that the white brother would return. And that when he returned, the warning was, because the Great Spirit gave them a broken tablet, and on one tablet, they were both given tablets, and they would show the tablets to each other, the red and white brother, and the tablets, if they had a circle on them, if the white brother showed he had a circle, that means he had become wise in the ways of the yang energies, and they could then harmonize together and create a better world. But beware if the white brother Pahana came back with a cross etched on his tablet. That means he's gone astray. He's gone false. And what he will then bring to Turtle High Island and the people, the red brother, would be great apocalypse and destruction, which he did. In the 1700s, when the Hopi saw their first Spanish conquistadors and missionaries come into the region, of course, they saw right off that they were all emblazoned with crosses on their flags, crosses that they built in the stone missions that they left. And eventually, the Hopi ran them out. And somehow, they managed to survive each wave of new white settlement. But in their prophecies, they started to see their prophecies being fulfilled, the prophecies of the final warning, which were indicating that the time of the fifth world's fire was coming. And they saw they saw wheels roll across the land of the Hopi, where, you see, until white people came, wheels were never used, circles were never used as wagons. So they see them across their lands, as foretold. And the long-horned cattle, animals of Pahana, the white man, also came with them, the long-horned steers.
Well, and they did, that's right.
And then with time, there are many other warnings, but some of the more significant warnings are that they saw that there would be an iron road and an iron horse that would be placed upon the train. Then Pahana would put up iron ropes in the sky on posts and crisscross the land with them. And eventually what would happen as we march into our modern times is those iron ropes would be replaced by cobwebs crisscrossing the sky. These are the contrails of planes, jets. Then would come important messages in the prophecy fulfilled that would indicate that the time had come for the Hopi to break their silence and tell the world of the rest of their final warnings. And that was when they saw a great war would happen, come to Turtle Island, that would come in the guise of three forces. The force of the rising sun, Imperial Japan, the swastika, Nazi Germany, and the great red, Soviet Union.
Ah,
and then, after that, shortly would become there would come the great and terrible weapon of the white man. And that would be the gourd of ashes. The gourd of ashes, when it was lit off as a great explosion, left the land sterile, where nothing would grow.
Nukes, right?
Yes, and in fact, if you take a gourd, a Hopi gourd, and you turn it on its neck, it looks like a mushroom cloud rising.
Ah, you're right. You're right.
So that is when that happened, that's when the Hopi understood, the elders understood that it was now time to tell Pahana and all the other races of their prophecies and to prepare the world for the coming of the great purification. Because now the prophecies start to talk about, and one of the final ones is that there would be a permanent home built by the white man in the skies that would float around Earth.
And the ISS, right?
Yes, and that that they'd go to the moon and take some of the moon material back to Earth, and that was a very bad thing to do, they thought. It was also one of the white man's final acts before the great purification. Now, a lot of people have been anticipating that there's another prophecy line to this called the Blue Kachina Star, where people are expecting that some great star would come down and hit the Earth. Now, again, one can jump to hyperbole and conclusions and try to find that lighter to light their hair on fire about a number of things. For instance, Comet Ison a few years ago did burn blue, and it would have been an interesting thing to see it if it had survived coming around the sun, to even become a more brilliant blue comet as a portent. But it's also true that some people who saw Skylab fall, one of the first houses the white man built in the sky, it also came down in a blue fire. There was also the Russian Mir space station that did that.
Same thing.
Indeed,
yeah.
The space station that we have now will be replaced in the 2020s. And so it will have its day of coming out of the sky. But that doesn't mean the permanence of people in space has been disrupted. So looking at the subjectivity of the prophecy, I try to bring in the objectivity of, well, okay, here's what factually could or could not be a part of this idea, this concept of prophecy. And so it could very well be that another blue comet will come that will be one of the last warnings. But basically what the book shows, and it's one of my other, is what I call my essential prophecy series. I did this, the Essential Nostradamus, where I took, you know, the vast prophecies of Nostradamus and distilled them down to the most interesting past, present, and distant future prophecies. This one also is a short book under 20,000 words, an ebook that the Essential Hopi Prophecies that will look at distilling these Hopi ideas in a quick and informative way to read and really have an understanding of them. And in so doing, when anything becomes popularized, when it becomes populist almost, you will find there's a whole lot of things attributed to the Hopi, just like there's a whole lot of things attributed to Close Encounters of the Third Kind, since they've become so popular in our culture, that it's difficult to separate the wheat from the chaff of imagined and over-imaginative concepts that are just really rumor. And so with this book, I've gone back to the original, initial statements of the Hopi elders about what their prophecies mean.
Well, it's almost like a science book too, John, isn't it?
Well, their science comes from the Latin root to know rather than to believe. And so I suppose so. And since we are now entering the 20-century-long age of science, because that is what the Aquarian age will be, we're moving away from blind faith and superstitious religions. And even now, our religions will start to take on more and more of a scientific quality and discipline, rather than people of the future being interested in just blindly believing and establishing their mortal existence on a wager of a qualified ignorance borrowed from somebody else. In the religious path of the Aquarian Age is about, I do not believe, I strive to know. And if I cannot know at this moment, I embrace and accept and celebrate a life in the unknowable until I can know from my direct experience of what is this mystery. And so that's really in a nutshell. So yes, it is science, and in the Aquarian age, it's science melding with subjective science. There will also be subjective science in the Aquarian age, because it's not enough just to measure objects and phenomenon. You have to also measure the consciousness of the experimenter, the scientist.
That's right.
That's
critical.
And we filter our data.
The Hopi prophecies, which seem to be pretty darn accurate, when they get to these final warnings that you've been talking about, it's not very pleasant, John, is it?
It is. It's not. I mean, I look at the Pacific Northwest with 74 days of no rain. I look at California that's desiccating before our eyes, and soon, in a few more months, is now going to be underwater with major storms as the super El Nino that
El Nino, yeah.
It's super El Nino I predicted 2.5 years ago was coming. It came a little later than I initially stated in predictions 2013, 2014, and predictions 2014, but it's here, and it will be more significant than the temperature tsunami spike that happened in 1998. That was the last truly super El Nino that we had. So it's far more enhanced, and that too will play a lot on what people on the campaign trail talk about in the coming year of the fire monkey, which is a hot monkey.
And
so yes, these prophecies are talking about our times, and they're talking about our times as being something that's happening that we're perpetuating. I mean, what is our response to all this mountainous data of science? More data now, mountains of it more than all the data we know that prove that the Holocaust happened. And we look at people who deny the Holocaust as loony, but that's a little molehill of data compared to the mountainous data that's been collected over the last 40 years that categorically proves that we are causing our climate to heat up. And there is such also clear data that those who finance a handful of scientists and others to deny this is so are often sourced to the same fossil fuel industries that do not want people to be enlightened to this danger, because it will be bad for their business. And I totally understand the Koch brothers feeling this way. And
is this,
like
John?
If this comes out, their world is over.
Well, it is over. And so is their bank account.
Yeah.
Is this
fighting to keep it?
Is this end times prophecy? Because it seems to echo the book of Revelation. It seems like the Hopi were right on.
Well, here's the thing. The book of Revelation, I'm going to write a book about this. The book of Revelation, it does feel that it's coming, but there's this danger of a phenomenon I call in prophecy propaganda, and that is a popularized interpretation of certain eschatological scripture, that's end time scriptures of different religions, that may actually be completely wrong, but it is perpetuated and then becomes kind of a mass hypnotic phenomenon where it seems to be fulfilling itself, but not because that's what they meant. It's because we have gotten in our minds and been conditioned for 2,000 years to anticipate what St. John was writing to be in later times, even though if you read the Greek and the original work of Book of Revelation, you will find that there are many, many instances that are saying it's now, it's coming in our time, it's coming around the corner. It is. You will see this in your lifetime. It's here, it's now.
Hold on for a second, John. We're at the top of the hour. I want to come back to and talk with you about this fourth blood moon, what this all means, and then we'll get into the candidates and get your take on it. And find out if you're still sticking with the possibility of Hillary and Jeb. We'll be back.